Communal prayer has taken a completely different form in the face of the reality of the novel coronavirus. We no longer can go to Mass. Many of us can't even go into a church, but we are still invited to pray. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register and host of Register Radio on EWTN Radio. As I've participated in Mass or prayer through virtual reality, many questions have come to my mind about the efficacy of what I'm doing, of how I'm praying in this new reality. So today I decided I needed answers to my questions, and I found my favorite liturgy guy, Chris Carsons, who happened to be available for this conversation. So Chris, thank you for being with us.
Jeanette, thanks for the invitation. It's my pleasure.
So a little background about Chris. Christopher Carsons is the director of the Office of Sacred Worship in the Diocese of La Crosse, Wisconsin, and he's also editor of Adoremus Bulletin, which is just everything liturgy. It's a wonderful resource. He's author of A Devotional Journey into the Mass and another new book, The Devotional Journey into the Easter Mystery. So, Chris, today, it's March 27th when we're having this conversation, and today I joined Pope Francis, as many, many, many people did across the world, in prayer for the Urbi et Orbi, which is a special prayer that I'll let you explain, but it's a special prayer that Pope Francis invited us to today. It usually happens certain times of the year, Christmas, Easter, but he had it today on this Friday of Lent. It was in the presence of practically no one physically. There were a few people, Monsignori or priest who assisted him, but St. Peter's Square was empty. And there the Pope venerated the cross. He adored the Eucharist, and he gave us a benediction. And for me, it was a very dramatic experience. Just the visual was dramatic. I mean, this empty square, Pope Francis in the rain, looking out into the dusk in Rome, where so many people are ill. And here I was, so the Pope's there in the presence of the Eucharist, and here I was kneeling in front of my computer screen, but adoring Christ nonetheless in my heart. And in my actions, I felt united, and I felt Christ's presence. But Chris, I wasn't there in the presence of the Eucharist like the Pope was. Mm-hmm. So what are these different types of presence that we are experiencing here?
Yeah, those are great questions. And I'm discovering in all of this past few weeks, I certainly don't know as much as I thought I did. And so I'm trying to answer these myself. You know, I think there's a couple ways we might look at it. I mean, on the one hand, God remains who he is, and Jesus remains who he is, and his saving paschal mystery remains objectively what it is. And on the other hand, as you and me and our families and our friends in the world remain people in need of grace and salvation and divinization and encounter. So those things haven't changed from last year. What has changed is this sacramental liturgical medium that really is sensible and tangible and audible, mm-hmm. and all of the rest that brings us so intimately close to Christ. And that's what's so different this year. Whereas you could be present physically, say in Mass or something like that, now it's mostly it's spiritually. So what that seems to be one of the things that's different is that we are encountering Christ's presence, whether it's in a monstrance in Rome at 6 p.m. their time or the monstrance in that parish that you used to go to, we're able to encounter Jesus and receive his grace not in the normal and privileged sacramental channels, but more spiritually. And this has taken a little bit of effort, but there is certainly a great desire for it. But that's what I think we're faced with these days.
Absolutely. I mean, every sacrament has a physical form that's necessary and a spiritual reality, and that's really kind of the definition of a sacrament. And so what we're seeing here is this kind of separation, if you will, where we're longing for that physical, presence of the sacrament, but what we're only able to do at this moment is seek to unite ourselves spiritually. And you're right, it takes some effort, but doing it, you know, I've been writing about it as an editor and, running the register and trying to provide what people are asking for right now. We've been writing about this, but when I actually do it, it's amazing how tangible Christ's presence still is, even though I cannot receive him. And that's a really beautiful thing, something I'm extremely grateful for. I realized that, watching Christ in adoration today as I adored through my computer screen was a bit like talking to my parents on FaceTime, because I'm not seeing my parents right now either. There seems to be a real communication that takes place even with Christ in the Eucharist at this time. Is that a crazy thought?
No, I don't think it is. I think it's, I think it is real. There's maybe this is a good analogy, maybe not. When Paul VI wrote this letter called Mysterium Fidei, maybe in 1965, I think, and he's talking about the real presence. He's talking about the variety of ways that Christ is present in the Mass, say in his word and his minister and the assembly and things like that. He says, we call Christ real in the Eucharist, not because the others somehow aren't real. This is just exactly what he says, but that his reality in the Eucharist is a substantial one. And so we call it reality par excellence. So I think by extension, we could say these other connections that we have, whether it's through the radio or through the telephone or through the television screen or something like that, are not somehow unreal, but they're just a few more steps removed from the normal course of things that to sort of get to the reality, some different skills, a different way of praying is required of us so that we can encounter this reality, because we're not able to do it through the normal means. You know, I wonder if there's another parallel here. A lot of people, Who ever heard of spiritual communion a year ago? But
right.
Now I think a lot of people have. And, you know, whether it's communion, it's a real communion with Jesus, but it's sort of kind of going around the side of the physical appearance of bread and wine. And even this communion that many of us felt today with Pope Francis and through him and through to Jesus in the Eucharist is real too, yet in a different sort of way. And even with the Triduum liturgies, there is real fruit to be, spiritual fruit to be had in these Triduum liturgies, even if you're at home. And so we're going to have to try to tap into that and encounter Jesus in a different way outside of these normal sacramental physical means.
You know, you brought up, I think it was Mediator Dei. Is that Mediator Fideis? Is that the one?
I may have said Mediator Dei. I think it's Mysterium Fidei.
There
Paul
you go.
The
I'm
sixth
sorry.
And 65.
Mysterium Fidei. So I'm not sure if that was the letter or writing that I'm thinking of, but this was before Vatican II. And I just remember studying, when I was studying liturgy once upon a time, probably in school, that there is different kind of grace available to us when we receive Holy Communion. And I hope I'm not wrong in this, but there's obviously the objective grace that Christ wants to offer us in his sacrifice. But we're not always capable of receiving it for reasons of distraction, for reasons of our soul not being clean, that we come with a different size receptacle, if you will, for receiving him. Is that accurate?
Let's talk about grace, first of all. I know this was true for me, you know, as a, you know, adolescent, you know, grudgingly going through confirmation and things like that. You know, grace just seemed like some sort of supernatural, kind of almost material sort of thing, this stuff that you get when you go to sacraments. But what grace is the divine life of God, and figures in the liturgical movement would just call it Christ's life. And so it's the divine life of God that is offered to us in the sacraments. And, you know, we'll kind of intellectually parse this out and call things sacramental grace and sanctifying grace and prevenient grace and actual grace. And it seems a little bit artificial, but it's it's in the end, it's all the grace of God. Now, the thing, okay, so that's the grace part. The other part is about our disposition. And for this grace to be, and I think the word that the theologians would use most often is fruitful. For grace to become fruitful, our disposition needs to be open and docile and humble so that the grace of God and the power of God can work its sanctifying and divinizing effects. Because the objective grace of the sacraments isn't magic. You know, it doesn't work right against our will or something like that. So that's why, you know, if 10 people, unfortunately, we need to imagine this, but if imagine 10 people in line for communion, Jesus is 100% objectively present to each of those 10 people. But depending upon the disposition, that grace may not be equally fruitful in the lives of those 10 people or myself. You know, I go to communion 10 different times. If I'm not ready, then it's not going to work magically. It cooperates with my disposition.
One of the things that I feel that this moment has done for me, this is a fast from the Eucharist that has been forced upon us. It's making my love of the Eucharist grow and actually making me much more aware of my spiritual disposition. I hope that that's happening with many. Have you seen in your conversations with people and your observation of this moment an opportunity for some renewal in the life of the church and in the life of Catholics?
Yeah, well, a couple of things. Insofar as I am talking to and seeing and communicating with people,
virtually,
and, you know, the circles I run in, I think that people would say this, this sort of absence makes the heart grow fonder is really proving to be a rather true kind of maxim. But, you know, another thing that maybe you've seen this, Jeanette, and other listeners, there's this little excerpt from Cardinal Ratzinger that's making its way around various sites about, he tells this story about St. Augustine excommunicating himself near the end of his life from receiving the Eucharist so that, you know, he could kind of join with, he would be refraining from the body of Christ in the Eucharistic form and joining with the body of Christ in the ecclesial form. But there's some really quite beautiful reflections that Pope Francis has in this little commentary he has on St. Augustine, that fasting from the Eucharist, not in any sort of Jansenistic way that, you know, used to be prevalent 150 years ago, say, but fasting guided by the church can do this very thing, to foster a hunger in us and to improve our disposition so that when we do receive this divine medicine, right? See, think about any human medicine. You know, either you have to eat it on a full stomach or an empty stomach, or take it with water, or take it with dairy, or whatever it is. If you just take medicine on the natural level without the proper disposition, it can harm you. And I think what Pope Benedict was getting at is, you know, if a sort of fast, imposed or not, is there, it might help make that reception of the Eucharist more fruitful in our lives.
You know, one of the things today about watching Pope Francis that was really quite beautiful is just how solemn the celebration was, the benediction, the adoration of the cross, the veneration of the cross, adoration. All of it was extremely solemn, and it always is when you follow the rituals of these liturgies. Today, you know, we saw the Eucharist, and then there was this little umbrella over it. You know, there were veils being used. What is all of that? I mean, these are things we don't really think about, but obviously, as you watch them and you're focused on them in a different way, they popped out to me. They made me drew me into what was happening there, to the drama of what was happening. What was all that? Is it all symbolic? What is all the vestments there?
Yeah, I've been working a lot with my bishop and others to try to get, you know, to priests some guidelines to help them celebrate the Triduum liturgies, probably by themselves or with a small group, but at the same time, trying to make them as beautiful and glorious and efficacious as they might be, and not kind of fall back on kind of a minimalism And when I saw the Urbi et Orbi today, I mean, it was, and heard the beautiful music. I mean,
yes,
they were doing great justice to this, to the glory of God, I thought. So I found it very inspirational that way. But I think the principle, whether you're watching the Urbi et Orbi on your computer screen or you're in Mass, is it goes back to this sacramental principle that, you know, God doesn't need this material stuff to communicate with us, but we need it. We need it because we're not angels. We communicate through our bodies, through our senses, through our eyes and our ears and our noses and all of the rest. And so to hear glorious music and to see beautiful vestments and a well-executed liturgy and postures and walking and prayer and all of those are sensible signs that God has chosen to use to communicate with our human nature. Those are kind of the vehicles through which we encounter him and he gives us his grace. So, you know, back to these spiritual communions and spiritual triduums and these other spiritual ways that we need to commune with God, unfortunately, forcibly, while they may not be less real, they're kind of, you know, they're not doing justice to our bodies. You know, we need to see stuff like this and
right.
smell incense and feel holy water and hold a palm in our hand and things like that, because that's where we come to touch God. So, yeah, that's what we saw today, and that's what that's the sacramental system that the Lord has established.
Right. And those little things are sacramentals. We forget that word. We don't use that word when we're talking about holy water or blessed art or you know, all of these signs and symbols, but those are sacramentals. And it occurred to me that when I was we were setting up to watch the Mass with my kids on Sunday, that in order for them to realize that we're not just watching a show, we needed to put out sacramentals. So we made a little altar. We had some incense of our own, and we had holy water, and we had candles. And they're too young to be altar servers, but they actually enjoyed imitating the altar servers for our Mass that we had on Sunday. And I feel like this is something that we can do. I mean, I watched prayed with the Pope today on my knees in front of my desk, because that's where I was when this was happening. And I really, it felt inadequate. Why? Because my desk is a mess. I really felt like I wanted to be in a space in my domestic church that was set aside for prayer. And I think that's something we can all do. We should probably end this conversation, because I have others I want to have with you maybe in the next few weeks. But how might we, Chris, make our space when we're praying and when we're utilizing this new way of praying? How can we make our space holy?
Yeah, well, I think the first thing is to recognize that you have to, that, you know, it's our nature that we need these things. I love these ideas that you suggested. I know that when we had Mass Sunday, you know, we didn't watch it on the regular TV screen. We still made the kids and parents still got dressed up, and we stood and we sat and we knelt and we sang and we folded our hands and all of the rest. Again, not because God needs us to pray this way, but because we need to pray this way, because we are body and soul. And so these other extra things that kind of help, even if we're not there physically in front of sacramental signs, we need something like that to help direct our souls to this encounter with God.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for answering my questions. I'm sure many of our listeners have many of the same kind of questions. I hope that in the coming weeks, we might be able to talk about your book, Devotional Journey into the Easter Mystery, because here we are preparing for Easter, realizing most likely we're not going to be in the church like we so long to be during such a joyful time as Easter. And so I hope we might be able to talk soon about that book that you've written. But for now, thank you, Chris Carsons, who has shared with us his knowledge of the liturgy and his love for the Eucharist.
Thanks, Jeanette.